Thank you very much.
They got a top heavy with the speaker.
Reverend Johnson, Speaker Pettigrew, and my friends. I didn't realize that words could be so heavy. In behalf of Mrs. Muskie and my daughter Melinda, may I say, first of all, how much we appreciate your willingness to receive us and to welcome us this morning. We did have breakfast earlier because we had a few things to go over before we came. And I did not want to delay you when we arrived. So let's get down to business. And I think the Reverend put it just as it ought to be. I'll try to say in a few words just enough to indicate to you my purpose in coming, my purpose in being here in Florida, and to set the stage for you to ask me questions. I will not promise, as the Reverend suggested, that I'll have answers to all your questions, but I'll do my best. Last evening, as we drove in from the airport about 11 o'clock, I noticed a sign, an advertisement by one of the airlines. And it was an advertisement for a round-trip fare, weekend fare, to any one of 20 northern cities for $94. Now, that's pretty cheap, but I couldn't figure out the purpose of the advertisement. Did it suggest that with temperatures like this, you might just as well be enjoying snow as well? That might have been the reason. Or the other reason might have been that people who are interested in presidential primaries might be better off going north rather than south. I say that lightly, but now I'd like to say it seriously. I've been traveling this country for the last 2 or 3 years. And I've been trying to travel in all areas of this country and to meet with all groups of Americans. And from time to time, I read invitations in southern newspapers saying to me, in effect, Senator, are you writing off the South? Why don't you come down here, listen to our problems, and try to understand us? Well, I've been visiting the South in the last 3 years and will continue to do so. And I've entered the Florida primary because I think it is important that the people of Florida, whoever they are, black, white, young, old, rich, or poor, should have an opportunity to make an impact upon the selection of presidential candidates and the election of the next president of the United States. And the Florida primary is one way for you to do so. No one can predict at this point what the result of the Florida primary will be. And certainly I cannot predict it. But the Florida primary creates another opportunity. And it creates a challenge to every man or woman who seeks the presidency of the United States. And that challenge is this: whether or not it is possible to come into Florida, as well as New Hampshire and Illinois and Wisconsin and California, and talk about the same problems and the same policies and the same programs to Americans wherever they live. Because it seems to me the great challenge to our country today is this: whether or not all Americans, whoever they are, can believe once again that the purpose of this society, that the purpose of this country, that the purpose of this government is to serve their needs as they see them on a day-to-day basis. I can't recall a time in my life when there has been more doubt on the part of Americans for different reasons. Blacks for different reasons than whites. Young Americans for different reasons than old Americans. Southern Americans for different reasons than Northern Americans. But I can't remember a time in my life when Americans had greater doubt about the relevance of government and its purposes and its directions to their lives. And I think that unless those doubts are resolved in the course of this election campaign in the next 11 months, America faces a very difficult and serious future indeed. I happen to believe, on the basis of my travels in the last 3 years among Americans of all descriptions, that most Americans want to find, if they can, the common bond which will make it possible for them all to work together. They don't see it now too often. Indeed, it may not be there unless they can be made to see it. But there is always such a strong urge to find it, if at all possible. And if we cannot find it, in the course of a presidential campaign, if we cannot find it in the men and women who seek the opportunity to serve as President of the United States, then we cannot find it at all. Because people cannot, on their own, in a divided and doubtful time such as this, reach out to each other effectively without leadership to show the way. And so that's the test. And that's why I have entered the Florida primary. And that's why I'll be coming to Florida in the weeks between now and March 14th to talk to you and to other citizens of Florida about our common problems. It is said to me that with the beliefs that I hold, there are some areas of Florida I ought not to bother with. That with the beliefs that I hold, there are some people in Florida I ought not to bother to talk to because they won't listen. Well, I say to you that from my point of view, the beliefs I hold are valid only if they are saleable to Americans of all descriptions. They're not valid if the only way we can govern this country in the future is by putting together a narrow plurality of people united by their selfish interests. This country won't work that way. But if it's possible to put together a broader majority of people who can see their own particular interests related to a broader general interest, then we can indeed make of America what so many of us have always dreamed it could be, what it has come close to being in its best moments in the past, and what I personally believe it can be once again in the future. Now, that's what I wanted to say to you as a setting for your questions. I had an opportunity to say it about 3 weeks ago at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. So I appreciate the opportunity to meet with other black clergymen and other black leaders and other black politicians and others here this morning in Miami. This, I think, must be the theme of our efforts as a nation. Whether it's a viable political platform, I don't know. I hope that it is, not because winning an election is that crucial to me and my life, but because I think this theme must prevail in American life in the difficult years that lie ahead if we're to do what we all want to do. With that, I would be glad to get into the question period.
Mr. Sir.
Senator, the issue seems to be, who can you trust? Would you tell us what factors you think the voters should look for in a candidate in determining who they can trust?
Okay, did you all hear the question? All right, the question is, how does a voter decide whether he can trust a candidate? Well, I don't think he can base the answer to that question upon what the candidate himself says. What the candidate says is self-serving. And so that's a question that you must ask the voter to answer. I would assume, of course, that they're interested in his views and that they would be interested in knowing whether his record, if he has one in public office, supports the views that he now expresses, or if he has changed his views, whether he's done so for reasons that are based on conviction or expediency. Now, those are questions that a voter must ask and answer. A voter ought also to look at the man himself, his life, how he conducts himself. Look into his face. I mean, how do you decide, you know, whether you trust the man you're going to buy a car from or an insurance policy from? I mean, you set your own tests. The candidate can't set them. My own approach to it is this: to be as direct and as straight and as honest and as truthful as I can be in discussing problems, my own positions, and what I think needs to be done. I'm fallible and I'm going to make mistakes, and I think I ought to be willing to concede those when I make them. I'm going to tell unpleasant truths from time to time, and I've got to be willing to do that as well, because it seems to me the only basis upon which we can make what I'm calling a new beginning in American life is to be frank about our situation as we see it, be truthful about each other's strengths and shortcomings, about our government, about its weaknesses, about what it proposes to do, about its directions. And so you've got to measure the candidate and decide whether you can trust him. I can't convince you that I'm trustworthy. If I were to try to do that, I would have made the first argument against my trustworthiness. I liked it very much.
Our organization incidentally has black members. I noticed you just spoke about the black ministers. We have black laymen, and so on.
Well, I didn't realize that. I'm happy to know that.
Our organization is sponsoring proposed legislation entitled A Federal Anti-Recession and 100% Full Employment Law. No baloney, full employment law. That's got that 4 2/10% built in. I don't know what the economist came out with that bright idea. But anyway, provisions call for new approaches never before considered by Congress, namely priority use of money and credit. Therefore, very little appropriation funding is required. Now, unemployment is the major economic problem in America. Last night, the TV newscasters told of another increase in misery and predicted that the presidential election may well be settled on this thorny issue. Now for a two-part question. Can we dialogue on this proposal before you leave Miami? Number two, when you do return to Washington, will you make an honest aid effort to seek immediate congressional committee hearings for the quickest possible enactment of this proposed legislation and thus bring hope to millions of American families who are in desperate need of your help?
May I say, first of all, that I agree completely that this question of unemployment and full employment is at the very top of list of our concerns in this country. And our polls indicate that it is in Florida as well as in other parts of the country. Secondly, I think that our objective as a nation ought to be guaranteed full employment. And I made proposals of my own in this connection in a speech in Detroit last May, which I'd be happy to send to you. I think that our objective as a country and our policy as a government should be the guarantee of employment with government as the employer of last resort. Now, I haven't had an opportunity to study the particular means that you propose in your proposal. I will, of course, take it back with me and study it and give it to my staff to study and will then respond to your questions. Now, whether or not where this would fit into the context of other similar proposals that are being surfaced in Washington, I have yet to determine. But I'm sure that this next session of the Congress will address itself to the question of unemployment and the objective of full employment, and that hearings will be held, and if they are, it would seem to me that your proposal would be a proper subject.
And you will meet sometime with members of our committee?
Yes, I'd be glad to, and members of my staff would be glad to meet with members of your committee staff.
Senator Musk.
Yes, sir.
Senator Musk, today, as far as Dade County is concerned, we have lots here in Dade County that doesn't get cleaned up. We have men who we elect every year. They tell us the stories about they're going to clean up Dade County, but they don't do no more. We have one Negro, one woman that runs this town, sir. I'm telling you like it is. They won't tell you, but I'll tell you.
Your question, please.
The question is this here. When is they going to clean up, sir? If they clean up, unemployment, I get this man said, you give them the jobs they want, you see after the needs of the people, and the people will put you in office. That's the main thing that people are getting on Nixon about. The unemployment of you having to lay off some of the people. The people don't have nobody, no job for people. The houses are poor. The conditions are poor. Improve on these, yes, sir, and you've got it made.
Father Gibson. Father Gibson has a very important announcement, and then we'll continue.
All right. Freedom isn't even free, nor is breakfast free.
I'm an Episcopalian, but you wouldn't believe that I know how to raise money.
I'll bet you do, Father.
That's the fact that I want all of you to contribute in this basket this morning. Pay for that food. Let the senator have a minute of rest while I get the money. Then he have a basket.
What
I know you got to go. I'm going to do it in a hurry.
What we normally do is we don't make any charge. We just pass the plate if they want to be able to do
all
it.
All right.
The church's program, you know. This outreach program.
Well, I another
while they are, do we need another trade? While we are, it's a free will offering, as free as your will allow it.
Just before we interrupted for Father Gibson's fundraising pitch, a young man posed a question that I wanted to answer. Now, I don't know that I can restate the question. I'm sure I can't restate it in his words. But what he was protesting, as I understood it, was the lack of jobs, the lack of decent housing, the lack of opportunity for young blacks, and I assume older blacks, in this area and around the state of Florida and across the country. This is a protest that is being made and has been made for too long, and it is a protest to which we must respond. Now, already we've had one question directed to the problem of unemployment in this area. And I think one of the great disservices of this administration in Washington has been its use of unemployment as a way of dealing with the inflation problem, because the effect of that has been to put the burden of dealing with inflation upon the backs of those least able to bear it. And whenever we have a reduction in employment in this country, it also puts the burden principally upon the backs of those who have less employment opportunity, and that includes blacks and other minorities. That's the effect of a problem of a policy of using unemployment as a way of dealing with inflation. So our first order of business in this country must be to get this country moving again by putting people to work. Now, one of the things wrong with the president's present policy is that it is not aimed at the unemployment problem. This past week, we've had economic forecasts of what is likely to happen economically in the country in 1972. And those forecasts show that gross national product will be up, that profits will be up, but that unemployment will remain relatively close to its present level. That's the best measure that I can point to of the ineffectiveness of this administration's economic policies. By the president's own targets, if he succeeds this year, unemployment will be 40% higher than when he took office. Now, this simply isn't good enough. I think the objective of our economic policies ought to be, first, not profits, not GNP, but jobs for our people. And I think the government must be directly involved in that, and the government must be the employer of last resort if we're to do it right. That's my answer to the first question. With respect to housing, the federal government's role must be this: to provide in the form of direct aid and incentives for a larger inventory of housing within the reach of lower income people. And that's principally blacks, because it is black housing that's been neglected. It must include as well a clear-cut federal policy that if to the extent that federal funds are used in housing, they should be available to blacks so that blacks can move into housing which is within their means wherever it may exist. In these two ways, we must make housing available to black Americans and other minority Americans. With respect to education, our target must be quality education. The young man used the phrase clean up Dade County. By that, what he means, if I understand his question, we must clean up the consequences of discrimination in this country. And we must do it by applying ourselves to these three problems at the local level, at the state level, and at the federal level. And if I am elected president, I pledge you my commitment to that objective insofar as the federal government has an impact upon those problems.
I'm going to have to follow a format. As you know, the senator has a news conference at another place in about 4 minutes, but we're going to ask him to be 4 minutes late because I want to have there's a 1, 2, 3. If someone can call the news people and tell them he'll be 3 minutes late because we have three questions. Father, you have a question or a comment. Attorney Taylor has a question that even though the question is not coming from a black person, it's about a black situation. And I think we ought to hear these three, and we're going to have to allow the senator to move out. Mr. Taylor, you want to ask your question?
Senator, as we well know, anything you say now can't be misinterpreted, certainly will. So, for this group, we would like you to make a little statement of your commentary out in California about the country wasn't ready for a presidential candidate, a vice president.
The question, for those of you who may not have heard it, was to comment upon my statement in California several weeks ago about a black vice president. Now, my statement was not an expression of preference. It was a statement of judgment as to what I thought were the political realities in 1971. I happen to resent the fact that those are the realities. And I commit myself to eliminate, insofar as I can and insofar as it is within my power, the discrimination which results in that kind of a reality.
Senator, that's a false premise.
It may be a false.
This is a year when a black man can't be elected vice president if a man on front of the ticket will accept him as his vice presidential nominee. This is the year for it, and you have the responsibility to this country and to this community to make a statement affirming your belief that all people are created equal, and they have the same rights to be elected to the highest office of the President of the United States as any other man in this country. And for you to have made that statement, and we make that statement again today, is a lack of good faith to the people in this country.
Well, let me say something to you, sir. The previous question from a black that I received this morning was from a young man here who told me that blacks are not being treated equally. He told me they're not being treated equally with respect to jobs, with respect to housing, with respect to education. And now you're telling me that isn't true? I say to you, let me finish, you've asked me a question. I say to you that it isn't a fact that blacks are being treated equally in this country with respect to these items or with respect to, may I finish? May I finish?
Brother.
Oh, you don't want me to answer the question? Well, I can't answer the question if you don't give me an opportunity to do so. Number one, I don't think you know what statement I made in California. Number two, I was undertaking here this morning to explain what I said in California. What I said in California was just what I was about to try to say before you interrupted me. I said blacks are not equal in this country, in education, in jobs, in housing, or in political opportunity. That's a fact as I see it. Now you can disagree with that. I can't impose my judgment on that fact with you with respect to the responsibility of eliminating that inequality. I agree completely with you that that's my responsibility, that's your responsibility, that's the responsibility of every American, and I commit myself to that. But I don't think we achieve it by closing our eyes to the fact of inequality.
All right, this question here. Father, I receive a note that you would like to make an observation following this question, and then we're going to have to cut it. Turn that mic off back there, something.
Why don't you turn it off? I think we can hear you anyway.
See if that's it.
First of all, may I say that with respect to what I have done about it, I've been a principal sponsor of the major drug legislation which was enacted by the Congress this last year. It included these elements. One, bringing in all federal programs dealing in any way in the Department of Defense, the Department of Justice, the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, dealing in any way with the drug problem into an action office in the White House. With that, we must have developed, and there are incentives in the program to develop strategies at the local level, at the state level, as well as at the national level, bringing in enforcement, education, rehabilitation, control of supply into a strategy designed to come to grips with the problem. In addition, in that legislation, we for the first time committed massive federal resources to deal with the education and rehabilitation aspect of the problem. Senator Hughes of Iowa was the principal sponsor. I was a co-sponsor of that part of the legislation. We've committed $1 billion to that effort. Thirdly, the other aspect of the problem, which we've tried to get at in Congress, is through our foreign aid programs, trying to create incentives for the growers of the poppy in other countries, in Turkey and in Southeast Asian countries, to shift to other crops. The poppy is an important cash crop to poor farmers in those areas. And for governments in those areas to cut off those crops, there must be a substitute available, it seems to us. And so we've tried to develop programs aimed at that objective. Now, in these three ways, we've tried at the federal level, and my record's already clear, to come to grips with the problem. Now, I think that with that kind of federal role, fully funded and effective, we are in a position to back up the essential local efforts that we must have. We need to have, I think, more effective law enforcement in the black areas of our cities, not only to deal with this problem, but to deal with the crime problem generally. And I doubt that our effectiveness or our effort in connection with law enforcement in black areas has been as effective as we've tried to make it in other areas. And I think we have to improve that, and that is a way of getting at the drug problem. So we need a combination of enforcement, control of supply, education, rehabilitation, and a strategy for using all four at all levels to come to grips with the problem. Beyond that, what we need is to create a country in which people see a future for themselves, because we cannot ignore the fact that to a great extent, the drug problem is a response to the unhappiness people feel about the situations in which they find themselves. That also is part of the broad problem.
Ladies and gentlemen, we only have 60 minutes to an hour. And if we promise any guests who comes here,